Welcome to Eat, Capture, Share, the podcast for food bloggers, food lovers, and everyone in between. My name is Kimberly. I'm your host. Episode 69. Welcome back, everybody, to the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. As always, I am so excited that you're tuning in. Thank you for that. My name is Kimberly Espinel. I'm a food photographer, food photography teacher, the author of the Amazon bestselling book, Creative Food Photography, and of course, the podcaster here at Eat, Capture, Share. So we're jazzing things up this season and doing something a little bit different in this episode, something I've not done before. I was a guest on the Food Blogger Pro podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I know some of you heard me on the podcast, but the vast majority of you didn't. And so I hope and I think and I feel that what I shared on that episode is content that will be helpful for you and relevant. And so Björk and I kind of had a chat, and he was happy for me to share the episode from the Food Blogger Pro podcast here on the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. Now, before I tell you a little bit more about what I share and what the episode is about, I wanted to tell you two things. One is about my signature e-course, and then also a little bit of the background, the history of me and the Food Blogger Pro podcast. But first, my signature e-course. So as I'm recording this, it's Saturday evening. Everyone's already sleeping, so that's why I'm kind of sort of whispering a tiny little bit. And as I'm recording this, there are three spots left for my signature e-course, two for the premium and one for the foundation. So the course content for both the premium and foundation is exactly the same. So lots of focus on food styling. This season, we're also going to look at troubleshooting a lot of food styling. Really want to double down on that. There's also going to be much more business content woven in, because that's something that request keeps coming back and keeps coming back. So if you've been thinking about it, get in touch. There are three spots left. Like, it's never sold out so quickly. And maybe it's got your name on it. So get in touch. Email me at kimberly@thelittleplantation.co.uk. And maybe we can set up a discovery call. It may be that the course isn't right for you, or that now isn't the right time, or in fact, it is. The creatives who have signed up are wonderful. And yeah, I'm so excited to go on this journey with them this season. Really honored they chose me, and wondering if one of those three empty seats is for you. So yeah, be sure to get in touch. Now, I wanted to tell you a little bit more about my relationship with Food Blogger Pro. I've spoken about this on Instagram, but I appreciate that not everybody sees all my posts. And I feel it's an important story to share, because I know I often fall into this trap of comparing myself to others, or better, comparing myself to the grid of what other people's lives look like. And I so never want anyone to look at my grid or listen to my podcast and think I've got it all together and everything's perfect and like everything's easy breezy lemon squeezy type of thing, because it's most certainly not. And I think what happened with the Food Blogger Pro podcast is a really good example of that. So I applied to be on the Food Blogger Pro podcast two times before I launched my podcast. So I really felt I had something to say, I had something to share, that a voice like mine didn't exist, you know, on the food blogger podcast platform. I was teaching, I had so many requests for sharing my story and sharing what I know, especially around food photography and styling. And so I reached out to the Food Blogger Pro podcast and I was turned down. And all of my other colleagues, of course, they got a spot, and it wasn't fair, and I was so unhappy. And so I thought, you know what, actually, if I feel so strongly about sharing my knowledge and sharing what I want to share with the world, then I need to just start my own podcast. And so I did. And then after I started my own podcast, I applied to be in the Food Blogger Pro podcast again, because I'm pretty persistent, and I was turned down again. And then actually, truth be told, I forgot about it. Like, I was in the swing of just rolling with it here on the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. And then I obviously wrote Creative Food Photography, and the book then, I think I never asked, but the book then caught Food Blogger Pro's attention, and they invited me to be on their podcast this season. Of course, I said yes. I love their podcast. It's really one of the very, very first Food Blogger podcasts that ever was. So if you haven't subscribed to their podcast, you should. Brooke is incredible, and the content they share there is just amazing. Definitely tune in. But I'm sharing this because I know, you know, sometimes it looks like everyone else's life is perfect, and I got rejected 3 times, so that didn't feel so great. But it did propel me to start. It was one of the many reasons why I started this podcast, and one of the reasons why sharing this episode with you today is so, so, so special. Now, in all honesty, when Bjork got in touch, or when his team got in touch, the idea was really to talk about finding your food photography style and talking more about creative food photography, because that's really the essence of the book, is how can you find your creative voice as a food photographer. But in fact, when Bjork and I sat down, the conversation took a completely different turn that neither one of us had really expected. And the result is a conversation that I actually feel potentially is more helpful to you than if I had solely spoken about food photography and finding your style. It's more about what goes on behind the scenes when you run a thriving food photography business. Like, how does that happen? We also explore how to deal with ebbs and flows in your food photography business. So when you're self-employed, when you freelance, there will always be ebbs and flows. It's not like a 9-to-5 where you have a set paycheck and you know exactly what's coming in. So for a lot of people, myself included, that can be really anxiety inducing. So I chat a little bit more about that. And generally, the episode is really about the behind the scenes, the stuff that nobody talks about, that I hope, however, will be super helpful for you, especially those of you who are at the very, very start of your journey, where those ebbs and flows are super unpredictable and a little bit scary. So yes, I hope you enjoy the episode. As always, I welcome your feedback. It helps me steer the podcast in the right direction for season 7. And anyways, I'm going to let you listen in, and hope you enjoy this episode.
Kimberly, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Bjork. I am super excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is great. I always talk about this. It's really wonderful when people come to the table. You have your mic, you have your sound insulation all around you. It's awesome. You've done this before. So you have a podcast. Tell us a little bit about that as we get into things. What's the focus for that, and how long have you been doing it?
Yes. So my podcast is called Eat, Capture, Share, and very similar to yours, it's really aimed at food bloggers as well as food photographers. So, you know, people who are really into the visuals of food, that's the focus. But we look at the social media side and the marketing and the business side of things, as well as the creative.
Yep.
And so it's kind of like that. And I started the podcast 2.5 years ago now, and I felt there was a kind of woman of color voice missing, that just took a very female perspective on both, you know, both sides of the coin, the creative and also the business side of what it actually means to be a food photographer and food blogger.
When you work with students or in a workshop, how, and maybe it depends on like what the actual workshop is about, do you find yourself talking more about the creative or more about the business, or is it like, it depends, and both are equally as important?
Yes. So I would say that the vast majority of students that come really come for the creative. Uh-huh. And so I would say actually up until the pandemic, sort of 85% of the thing that I shared was more creative focused. Yeah. But then the pandemic came, and what I noticed was that a lot of people were actually struggling to make ends meet. And also that you know, as more and more of us are doing food photography and becoming food bloggers, that there were so many people teaching the creative side. And actually my gift is to share more of the business side, because it's all good and well to know your camera and to know, you know, color theory and to be passionate about it. But then it's a whole other ball game to actually make an income doing what you love. So I've shifted a little bit more towards that since the pandemic, and I feel like I'm sort of stepping into what I'm called to teach.
That's cool. It's, I think of my dad who does pottery, and he talks about his friends who also did pottery and ceramics, and he had some of those people in his network. They were doing it full time, and one of the things he would talk about is, a lot of them also had this like edge in business and operations. And it's a really rare combination to be both an artist and also to understand business and operations. And, you know, I think of the work that, so Lindsay, my wife, Lindsay, you are vaguely familiar, I think, with the podcast. So know our story. She does Pinch of Yum, and that's kind of like the creative. And we have a team that we work with that does that. I kind of do like operations type stuff. That just kind of worked out that way. For some people, they are creative and they might not have somebody who is like business-minded operations, or they might be business-minded in operations, but they don't have somebody who they can work with to do the creative, and they don't feel like they are the creative. I think of our friend who talks about like left brain, right brain. I need to hire a left brain to help me. How much of it do you think is somebody learning those skills saying, hey, I feel like I am a creative. That's what I love doing. And I know that I need to do the business stuff, so I'm going to learn it, versus I just need to hire somebody and they need to help me do it. Do you have thoughts or opinions on that?
Yes. So, I mean, I think if you can hire, you know, the best situation is that you hire for the areas where you're weak in. So that could be like business, it could be website development, it could be whatever the case may be, right? So that's always the ideal scenario. But my audience, and I'm guessing a lot of your audience too, are at the beginning stages of their creative journey, where hiring out just isn't quite within reach yet. And so I think, I actually think it's much more of a story that we've told ourselves. So this kind of, you know, struggling creative, struggling artist, that somehow has stuck with us. And then also, you know, a lot of people go into creativity, it's because they're passionate about it. It's not because they want to run a six-figure business. That's not often the motivation. And somehow it feels that if you do pursue the financial side of things, you're selling out, or you're not really true to the art or whatever. And I actually think that we're in a really good position as creatives to be incredible business business people. And I believe that because I feel that business is about communication. And we communicate so much through our visuals. And it's about thinking and problem solving in a creative way. Like, how can I sell this? Or how can I, you know, get to that brand? And I think it's fascinating. And I have to say, my background is, you know, I was an adoption social worker for 15 years.
Oh, cool.
So I did nothing business related, and it's not a language that I ever, you know, knew about. But I think once you crack that code, a whole new world opens up, and you can share your work with so many more people and have your work be so much more impactful that I would love us to shift the narrative and allow ourselves to be the business people that we can be.
That is so cool. Between really cool to hear your backstory. Before so Lindsay and I, if you were to like put all of our siblings together, we'd have more adopted siblings than biological siblings. So like adoption is a really big part of who we are and our families, and just such a wonderful thing. So thanks for your work in that realm. When did you know that you wanted to make a switch, and how did you know the switch that you wanted to make was to this kind of hybrid world of food photography, food media, but then also like creative business?
So I would say my route to becoming a you know, creative business owner, food blogger, food photographer was really via a back street. Mm-hmm. That's how I always say, because I loved my job. I loved what I did. I saw myself doing that, you know, for the rest of my life. And then I gave birth to my son. Mm-hmm. And that really threw everything on its head because, as you will well know, yeah, you know, from having had siblings, you know, who've gone through the adoption process, you know, it's not a sort of job. I did adoption and fostering as well. It's not a sort of job where you can go at 5 p.m., uh-huh, you know, see you later. If you have a family who are, you know, struggling, or a child who's run away, or whatever the case may be, it's just not a clear-cut 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. And then also just the way that I live in London in the, mm-hmm, UK, and the way that things are set up, like it took me an hour to get to work.
Sure.
So, you know, it really meant that I wasn't seeing my child, yeah, for like, yeah, 12 hours a day. And
right,
there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, everybody finds a path that works for them, mm-hmm, but that setup didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And so I
have this realization, I love this, yeah, thing, but it's not working for me. Yeah. And so, yeah, then what? Like,
then what? Yeah. Exactly. So then I did a lot of soul searching. I was like, okay, I want a career that fits around the needs of my child. And, you know, what am I passionate about? What would I like to do? And it was, so he was born in 2010.
Okay.
And I don't, you know, that was kind of when food blogs were emerging, yep, when they're, yep, becoming a thing, and Joy the Baker and all the things, yeah, right? And so I was obsessed. I read them, I marked them, I loved them. And I've always been, you know, passionate about food. So in fact, what I did is I decided to retrain as a nutritional therapist. Huh. So that's what I did. And then I decided, let me start a food blog,
yep,
so that I can document. So I switched to a plant-based diet, and, yep, let me document those recipes, start a food blog so that I can attract an audience.
Yep.
And by the time I graduated, I was getting paid work, mm, as a food blogger and as a stylist. Mm-hmm. And then I actually decided, you know what, this, I love this. Mm. And so I went all in, and that's kind of how it all came to be.
Yeah, that's really cool. One of the things that I love about that is, and one of the things that I think we often see is people starting out saying, hey, I'm going to go the path of like nutritional work. You start to do that, and in deciding confidently that's where you want to go, there is this other world that's introduced to you, and that allows you to then have the opportunity to shift a little bit and to say, actually, this is, mm-hmm, where I want to go. And the point in that is encouraging people to not get too bogged down in saying like, mm-hmm, what if I don't pick the right thing, but to be light, mm-hmm, on your feet and say, pick somewhere, but also be open to the subtle shifts and changes that might come as you learn more about yourself and your passion and your area of interest. But along with that, you have to pay the bills. So what did it look like for you as a business owner to say, I know that I'm interested in this, and here's how I'm going to make this work from a financial perspective? Were there decisions you had to make along the way? Did you say, you know what, I'd really love to do this, but it's not working, so I'm going to do this thing that is more financially viable? Like, you kind of knew the creative. So what did the business side look of it, and the decisions, mm-hmm, along the way with that?
Yes. So when I started my nutrition studies, I moved from working full-time to part-time. So I still had my adoption work. So I had that,
yep,
you know, that income stream, so to say. And I also have a partner who worked full-time.
Yep.
But as I was, you know, as the blog was developing and gaining momentum, I started getting approached by brands for, yeah, sponsored content, and I styled a cookbook, and, you know, lots of, you know, little jobs came to be. And so that by the time I graduated, I had proof of concept. Yeah. I had an income stream, and, yep, it was nothing to write home about.
Sure.
Like, it wasn't as though I won the lottery, yeah, or anything, but
we say like, if you can make a dollar, you can make two. And so,
exactly,
if you do, if you have $1,000, you know, month, you're like, wait, if I do this a little bit different and like change this and do more of this, then maybe this could work.
Exactly. So that's exactly it. I was just like, you know what, this is possible. Uh-huh. So what I did is I gave myself a year. I said, you know what, let me give myself a year. I've got enough in savings. I can do this, you, yep, know? So I just gave myself a year. And then the other thing to kind of piggyback onto what you said before is I also looked at my blog stats, and I looked, mm-hmm, at the content that was performing really well and the content that wasn't resonating. And, mm-hmm, ironically, when I wrote about nutrition, people weren't that interested to hear that from me.
Sure.
But when I wrote content around food photography,
uh-huh,
I had lots of blog hits.
Yeah.
And then I also had somebody kind of randomly contact me saying, I'm going to be in London for a couple of days. Will you teach me food photography? And, mm, I never considered that. Mm-hmm. And then she came and she paid. Yeah. And I was like, wait a minute, like all these pieces are telling uh-huh. me something. So I shifted my content more towards food photography. And that's really when things kind of, you know, took off, as it were.
Yeah, it's interesting. It feels like a really good example of having your ear to the ground and saying, what are the little movements and changes that I see happening around my business and the content that I'm creating? And there's this combination of stick-to-itiveness, right? Like, especially in the world of publishing, of content and creative work, you have to commit to the thing for a long period of time. But to contrast that, you also have to be willing to change to the needs of people. Like, there has to be this intersection of what you're interested in doing and directionally where you're going with what do people need and what will they pay for, whether it's a sponsored content, whether it's a workshop, and mm-hmm. and finding that balance between those. So do you have any advice for people who are at that point where they're trying to find what am I good at, what am I interested in, and what do people actually need and what will they pay for, and finding that intersection?
Yeah, it's called ikigai or something like that, right?
What is
like
it? There's that. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, there's a Japanese term for it. I don't want to butcher it, but I think I'll maybe if we can put it in the show notes.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Like
these three circles, and where they all collide is the. So you know, I think the one part that a lot of food bloggers at the start of their journey kind of skip is the tuning in to what your audience wants. Uh-huh. And that can either be, you know, very obviously you can just see the posts that people comment on Instagram, especially, sure. or the stuff that's pinned more on Pinterest. But I do like to dig deep into two other areas. So one is blog stats, or on uh-huh. Instagram, you also have insights. So I tend to do that at the end of the month. I kind of look at my Instagram stories, my posts, the newsletters I send out that sure. have the best open rates. And yep. I try and see, is there a common denominator? Mm. And then really hone in on that. And then also, very boring, but very necessary, mm-hmm. is actually look at my spreadsheets.
Sure.
Like, look at where does my income coming from?
Yeah.
You know, what did I have a client who booked me for food photography? Can I contact him or her again
yep.
and see if we can work together again? Or is there a preset that I sold that's selling really well? Can I push it to the front of the blog? You know, all those little things
yeah.
that I do take out time at the end of the month uh-huh. to do the review. And I feel it's made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Where I didn't do that at the start. Huh. I was just like, I'm just going to post anything. And, yeah. you know, so there is some thought process and some intentionality behind to make growth happen.
Yeah. I think sometimes what we can do is we can get so heads down that we just churn out stuff. Like, we get in production mode, we
yeah.
photograph, we do video, we write blog posts, we do social, we respond to everybody, whatever it is. And I think the act of reflecting and yeah. analyzing sometimes doesn't feel like work, but I think of the analogy of, you know, if you have 8 hours to cut down a tree, you sharpen your axe for 7 and you cut for 1. Like, I think there's something to be said about that. Maybe that's not the exact spread of time, but even for some people to say, well, just take at least an hour to sharpen your axe. And especially with knowledge work, it feels like some of the work of knowledge work is just thinking about work, which seems a little bit kind of like work inception. But what does that look like for you? Do you schedule that time? Do you say every Friday at the end of the month, I'm going to do this? Or is that just naturally a way that you operate now, where you take out your spreadsheet and you say, like, hey, yeah. for the previous month, here's how much work came in, and what areas, what can I do more of, what can I do less of?
Yeah. So Bjork, I don't know if you want to cut this out, but I can just tell that you're excited about talking about this.
It's great.
Like, this is the yeah. stuff that you
we'll leave it in. To. We'll leave it in. That's your like coaching ability to like the insight on this, which is
no, but
is
like,
awesome.
You know, this is the geeky stuff. This yeah. is the geeky stuff, but this is actually where it all happens. So I'm obsessed with journals and productivity. So I have like 3 journals, and one of them, again, maybe we can put the link in the show notes. I love it because it has at the front, it has your goals. So for me, I always have an income goal, you know, that I set for the year. And then it has your kind of daily goals and your priorities around that. Mm-hmm. And so I really try and tie those to, like, if my income goal is XYZ, sorry. If my income goal is XYZ, like what can I do today to move the needle forward? I got to look at my stuff. So I do that actually on a rolling, I do that daily. I check my income daily. You know, I do like my I do my accounts. And I also think that helps my mindset. So if I feel like I've just lost a client or, you know, I did a discovery call with a student and they didn't book, you know, sometimes we can feel down, but then I go back and I actually no, somebody bought my presets today. You know, like it makes me feel like I'm, you know, it's like a little boost. And I think we need that when we're working for ourselves to know that we're moving forward. But I check daily and then I check at the end of the month because of the accounts that I do. So it's really, really like it's a daily thing, just a checking in. And just, you know, because I think if I see that there's something that's happening in my business, like it just makes me feel like there's abundance. And then just at the end of the month, so I can rejig things. So it's very boring, but I do it daily.
With the time and all of it. and so is that you manually going in and saying like, okay, here's where I sell presets. Here's where they're available. You know, I sell them through whatever Gumroad or whatever service. Copy that, paste it in. to the spreadsheet and then just kind of repeat that? Is that essentially what that process looks like?
Yes, essentially.
And then to say, to reflect on that and to look and say, great, this is going well, this isn't going well. Or it's more just like introspectively saying, this is working well for me. So even in these moments that I that aren't going well, that you you have traction, you have kind of positive stuff happening. So you have this spreadsheet and you do that on a on a daily basis. You enter this stuff in. Can you talk about how much time does that take? Is that like 15 minutes? Is it an hour? Is it 2 minutes?
So I have to say, I, you know, for me, I don't have to do it because I have an accountant. I have to say I'm now at a stage where I have an accountant, but I do it, as I said, because for me, it's about feeling like there's abundance, like it, it shifts something in my mind and I find it helpful. And then the same way, if I have a month where my sales aren't so great, so where the business side is, then I don't need to freak out, but then I feel like I have some sort of power, you know, that it isn't all outside my control, that I can say like, okay, like last month we did this in revenue and this month we did half. What shifted? What changed? Did I send out your newsletters? Did I do your blog posts? You know, what can we do to, you know, did I lose a client or whatever it is? So it gives me the sense of that I'm in control of my destiny. And, you know, again, when you work for yourself and you don't have a boss telling you how amazing you are, you know, like you're, that gives me, it gives me the power, and it, I found it empowering. So I will take out whatever half an hour in the morning to kind of plan my day, to, you know, do my spreadsheets, to do all the things, because it fuels me for the rest of the day and gives me direction. Because if not, what I find is I could use that start of the day to scroll on Instagram or it's so seductive. It's so wonderful. But that gives me, that that anchors me, if that makes sense.
That's great. Yeah, I think a lot about people who talk about the first half hour, hour of your day being your, you know, it's kind of setting the direction for the day. And one way you could do that is like to scroll through Instagram or to like pop open your email and just kind of browse through that. But to say, hey, I'm, what's important for the business? Well, in this case, revenue. Where are the places where that's coming from? Great. Here's where it's coming from. How does that inform the decisions I'm going to make today in terms of what I do and work on? Great. It reminds me a lot of when we would do monthly kind of recap reports for Pinch of Yum and say, hey, here are the things that worked, here are the things that didn't work. But that rhythm for me was really helpful as like a forced exercise to reflect on what we were doing, what we weren't doing, what was working, what wasn't working. And it's something that I miss about doing those. We could like replicate it, but we haven't. So it's something that makes a lot of sense. The piece that I'm curious about that you had talked about before was this idea of treating any time that you have an issue or a problem that you come up against, instead of thinking like, oh, this is a business problem, I don't do business, like I need some help with this, instead saying, hey, this is a creative problem. This is a problem that I can come up with a creative solution for. And I think that mindset of like curiosity, the mindset of creativity as it relates to a problem. Maybe it's not a business problem. Maybe it's a puzzle and you get to figure out the puzzle. how do you do that? What does that look like for you as you've come up against, you know, you gave the example of like, hey, revenue was half this month than what it was before. Instead of being like, ah, this is the worst, how do you put on a, stay light on your feet and kind of be creative as a, as in regards to that as a problem that you can kind of approach creatively?
Yes. So can I, I'm going to say something before that, and it might seem a little left field, but I hope it's connected.
Love it.
And I say this again, because I'm listening to what I hear, you know, my audience tell me on Instagram stories. So another thing that I do is I, and again, this, I hope it makes sense. Like, this comes because I'm an immigrant. I'm a woman. I'm a woman over 40. I'm a brown woman. And so, you know, there's always a lot of negativity that I've experienced, you know? And so what I've always done is I've always had like really positive self-talk.
Yeah.
So I always say, yeah, I'm an amazing photographer.
Yeah.
I'm an amazing teacher.
Yeah.
Like, I tell myself that, you know, just to give myself strength. And I notice that a lot of people have a lot of negative self-talk. I'm not good enough. Oh, you know, I'm not really a food photographer. Oh, this client said no because, you know, what I offer isn't amazing or whatever, you know, like I don't get into that.
Yeah.
So that if there is, and all that to say is, so if there is a day where I'm not earning enough, I don't think like, oh my God, I'm crap. I don't know what I'm doing or I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
I think there's something that isn't working with my marketing or how I'm communicating this offer that I need to figure out. I need to figure out how, because what I offer, I feel is the best I can offer.
Yeah.
I feel I give it my all. I know that it can be transformational. So I know there's nothing necessarily wrong with the offer that I'm putting on the table. There's something else that's not right. And I need to figure that out.
Yeah.
Is it because my copy isn't right? Did I not use the right photo? Was it the timing? Like, I love the challenge of that.
Yeah.
I love the challenge of that.
Yeah.
But I think the foundation is that I believe in what I have to offer. And I think that is really helpful when you're stepping into a space like we do as food photographers and food bloggers that is crowded. Like, it's so easy to look left and right and think like, oh, she's so much better.
Yeah.
And so their food photography class is like, you know, like you can get into that. I try not to get into that. I try to go in with, I can do this.
Yeah.
There's just something that is awry and I need to put my finger on it and sort it out.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
I think it's incredibly powerful. And what I heard you saying, or at least a piece of it, is to not look inward and say, why am I, what is wrong about me that this didn't work? Yes. But to say externally, I know that what I'm doing is good.
Yeah.
I know that it's impactful. I know that the work that I'm doing is excellent.
Yeah.
So if there is some hiccup along the way where that's not fully getting communicated, let's look at that. Like, maybe it's the copy, and the copy needs to be changed to like do a better job explaining that, or like, so essentially looking at the external things and saying, how do I give as clear visibility inward to what I'm doing, which I know is excellent and wonderful and worthy of whatever it is that you're doing, being hired, paying for, as opposed to saying like, shoot, how do I fix myself? Is that a little bit of kind of what you're saying?
100% And I'm saying this because a lot of creatives, that's like almost in our DNA, doubt themselves. And I see this so much. People who create incredible work, like stuff when you want to lick the screen. It's so gorgeous. And they're so tough on themselves. And so that's why also I want to model that, because I want them to see, like, I think as food bloggers and food photographers, we bring so much joy into the world. What we do is so amazing, right? Like, we get these ingredients and then we create something that's beautiful. I mean, I don't know how much you're into the food photography side of things, but, you know, I remember, you know, the two or three food bloggers whose work I just fell in love with and who where I was like, oh my God, I want to do that. That's, you know, the power of what we do. And and I don't want us to ever forget. Like, I want people to know, like, they're doing amazing things. They're making brands' lives better. They're creating incredible content. their work is worthy, and like, and I need to model that in order to teach that, if that makes sense.
Totally. How much do you feel like the conversations that you're having with photographers, creators, how much of it is mindset, kind of reflecting on who you are, how you work, versus, hey, here's how you get better at shooting in manual, like really tactical?
I would say the audience that I'm now cultivating is moving more towards the latter because, you know, people can just go on YouTube and, you know, like when we started, that was none of that existed. And now it's just at the fingertips. But also there comes a point where you figure manual out, you, you know, you crack that nut, so to say. And then the next stage is about really positioning yourself and distinguishing yourself. And that actually requires mindset, but also introspection in the same way that that all that we've discussed about, like, how is your photography different? How are you going to stand out? How are you going to get noticed? How are you going to stop comparing yourself and imitating what is or has already been done to really fine tune your own voice? And so a lot of, you know, that's really the work that I'm doing much more now than quote unquote just you know, manual mode, and which is important, super important. But I think that for me, where I'm stepping into my role as a teacher is to really support people in finding their own unique creative style.
And what does that transformation look like? So where are people on that journey usually? Like if you were to kind of boil it down to, and then what does it look like once you're on the other side? Are you ever on the other side?
Well, I think it's a lifelong journey for sure. But I do think there's steps that are noticeably, you know, that transformational steps that are that everyone can see. So I think when a lot of the times when students come to me, they've, you know, they've watched the YouTube videos and they've done all the things. And what they're ending up is they're creating images that look generic, that look a little bit like what everybody else is doing. And so what
they're really good, but they're really similar to, I use the analogy all the time of songwriting, and it's like, you, it's like, oh, that's a really good song, but it kind of sounds like, you know, Sealed, Kissed by a Rose or whatever. It's like, wait, this is the same melody.
And so part of why that happens is because a lot of the times we are very external. So, which is normal. That's how we're set up as humans. We have our eyes at the front of our face. And so, and we're spending so much time on social media. So we're consuming a lot of content, and it's very hard not to get influenced by that. In fact, when you're at the start, it's very natural to want to imitate and, you know, emulate the people that you admire. But then there comes a stage where we actually have to do the introspective work and to think about what is my unique gift and how can I bring that to the fore? And that consists, for example, at looking at, I always say, you look at your color story. So are you on the cool spectrum? Are you on the warm spectrum? Do you find that you're moving towards using analog colors or complementary colors, or how are you expressing colors, for example? And that is one part of how you start creating your own look and your own feel. What I do is I ask people to kind of play with different ways of working with color, for example, so cool and warm, and then the different ways of combining colors, and to write down, which one do you like best? Like, which one got you really excited? Which image? Because it gives you lots of indicators of where you are. And the same with editing, the same with light work. All these things can be manipulated and controlled and changed in such a way that it allows you to create a signature look that somebody will see your image and it'll go, that's, you know, Lindsay, that's Kimberly. And I can really see that transformation. I also can see how people feel more confident in playing more boldly with color and really having a go at editing. There's like a messy phase in the middle where, you know, you're trying stuff out, but then when you come out the other end, it feels really good.
But I would imagine one of the fears, like if I put myself in that position, is looking, a lot of the reasons why I think we emulate certain people is because they have been successful. And there's a safety in saying, this person did it this way and they were successful doing that. So there's a relative amount of safety in me doing it this way because that's how this person did it. That could be applied to photography, you know, operations, best practices, like whatever it might be, business or creative. So how do people feel confident in creating their own look, style, brand, knowing that they might not have examples of that being successful in the world?
So I think one is you don't necessarily have to share everything, you know, like you can do a lot of the things behind the scenes and then only post something that you feel really confident with. I also think it's nice to be part of a creative community of people who cheer you on, maybe who give you feedback. So, you know, my courses, for example, we have Facebook groups, but you don't even need that. Like you could have a community on Instagram, you know, maybe a DM group of a friend that you connect with. But then also I think the other side of discomfort is where the magic happens. You know, it's part of the process. And sticking with a set formula, I think A, becomes boring very quickly, but B, I don't think you can ever be as good as the person that you're emulating. So, you know, I just think there's this, there's magic at the other side of trying and failing and trying and failing. And that's where you want to get to.
And part of it is, I think about this with podcasting, and I listen to certain podcasters and I'm like, oh my gosh, I love the way that they podcast, they interview. I think of a couple different people who are like really like confrontational, edgy. And it's like, I love listening to that. I know that's not going to be me. So if I try and emulate it, I could like put that, those jeans on, they're not going to fit very well. And I would imagine the same thing with photography. One of the things that you're trying to do is emulate when it's something that fits into who you are and matches what you're about in service of becoming the maximum version of who you are as a creator. Like how do you become 100, like max it out 100%. This is perfect alignment in my style, my, you know, how I want to show myself and present myself to the world. It might have little elements of those people who have inspired you, but really it is like you 100%. Is that kind of what you're trying to get through in that transformation?
Yes, exactly. And I think one way that can be helpful in, you know, stopping yourself from emulating certain people, like if you notice that you're doing that, is either a, you know, mute them for a little while, and or also start following work of people that are totally different than you. So the, you know, there's three creators who I really, really feel inspired by, and they're all so different. And so there's a little element of each of them that I've just, you know, that I, that really resonates, that I've kind of pulled to create my own look. And I think that, you know, versus just following everybody who does exactly the same kind of visual storytelling as me, that probably wouldn't have led to the style that I have now. And
who are those people that you appreciate, or just a couple?
Yes. So, somebody called Gabriel Cabrera. He's a Mexican Canadian food photographer who does a lot of really abstract, you know, artificial light colors, like it's neon green. It's crazy. I love it, and I love colors, so I don't work like that. And then the other one's Louisa Brimble. She does a lot of very natural, so very unstyled and very homely. Like it feels homely, and that's one of something I love to convey my photography, is the sense of belonging and you know, just a down to earthness. And then the other one is Erin Goyoaga, or Canel Vanille. And she does you know, just very kind of a little bit moody, darker shadows, but still, and that's very much me as well. So they're so different, and yet each one of them has totally influenced the photographer that I am today.
It's not exactly the same, but there's a little bit of overlap, so you can find inspiration without feeling like this person is doing kind of very similar work to what I'm doing, which I think, that's great. So let's say you get to that point, you've kind of in this early stages, you get kind of the technical expertise, which then kind of allows you to use that technical expertise to refine your style. I think it's kind of hard to refine your style if you haven't refined the tool set that's going to allow you to do that. Understanding your camera, understanding, you know, basics of styling, maybe some of the basics of like composition, things like that. So you go through these kind of general stages, technical kind of style or brand refinement, and then you get to the other side. How do you translate that into a business, if that's the thing that you want to do? For some people, that they can stop there and feel really good about it. I'm a creator, I've refined what I do, I feel really good about it. But some people then want to take that and say, great, I want to use this in the marketplace to create an income in some way? How do you go about doing that in the world of photography?
So a couple of ways. So one would be, I'm really very much pro having a blog. I know it's not quite as trendy anymore, sure. But you know, working on SEO and uh-huh. just thinking about what would my ideal customer be Googling and making yeah. sure that you meet those needs. And then actually showing you what, for example, I have a portfolio page mm-hmm. and I've just, you know, used all my keywords and tagged on yeah. my photos so that if somebody were to type in London food photographer, then yep. it would lead very nicely to, yes. you know, my portfolio page and also show yep. examples of the kind of work that I've done. Uh-huh. And then I do think posting regularly on Instagram, Pinterest, those kind of places is really powerful. So just the way that things are now, posting just once or twice a week is very hard, but you know, you need to post more regularly and make sure that you use all the hashtags again that people would be looking for. And also reaching out to brands, like if there are brands that you can see are working with other food photographers or food bloggers, you know, being cheeky and DMing them or emailing them. You know, I've struck gold that way and it's worked for me. So I can definitely recommend it. But
can you share specifically what that looks like and like walk people through? There was a brand, you were interested in working with them. You saw that they had worked with other food photographers. You messaged them and something came from that. How do you do that? Like, how would people go through the process of making that work? And any advice that you have for folks?
Yes. So a good example I can share is another food photographer who I am friendly with. I saw that she was doing, I think it was a campaign with KitchenAid, I want to say. Sure. And so I DM'd her. And I mean, this is somebody I knew, I have to say. So I wasn't like, yeah. you know, fangirling yeah, yeah, yeah. or anything. Yeah. And I just said, listen, I noticed that you work with KitchenAid. I'd love to work with them. Are you happy to share the contact that you use? And she's like, yeah, of course. And so then I DM'd that contact. Like, listen, my name is Kimberly. I saw that you worked with so-and-so. If you're ever doing a campaign and looking for vegan food bloggers or whatever, you know, do consider me. And then they did. And that's how
the kind it's of like one a personal one warm connection. There's something to be yeah. said about, it's like the basic premise of LinkedIn. Like, hey, you know this person who knows this person. Can you make the connection here? And it's manual and it takes work. And, you know, it's not something that scales, but the idea is kind of relationship-based connections. And that takes time. But it's also impactful. So love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's great. Other ways that you've seen students or people that you work with find success as a creator, whether it be sponsor content, you know, doing direct work with clients, like, hey, I'm going to do a shoot at a restaurant or for a brand. Other ways that you see people having success or things that should be considered kind of in the world of photography or creative media around food?
Yeah. So what I always advise people to do is to create the content that their ideal customer would be looking for. So if for, you know, for me, for example, I love working with plant-based and vegan brands. And, you know, if I look at the sort of content that they love, very much aligns with my style. It's a lot of rich, deep colors to kind of emphasize that plant-based aspect. So I'm not going to use muted tones, you know, I'm going to kind of double down on that. So really looking at what would appeal to my ideal customer. And I also think if you're at the very, very start of your journey, I know this is an unpopular opinion, but if you're at the very start of your journey, you don't have a portfolio mm-hmm. yet, you don't have experience yet, I think there's nothing wrong with reaching out either to a brand or mm-hmm. to a restaurant and saying, listen, I'd love to get some experience. Would you like some photos and doing some quote unquote work for free?
Yeah.
Just to build up your portfolio, to build up your confidence, to build up, you know, some experience. And sometimes I've seen that happen too, is those kind of free things can then turn into paid work as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, yeah, but then again, it goes back to thinking, problem solving, that yep. business side yep. to make it work.
Yeah. There's a story from somebody who attended a workshop that we did, like an online workshop. I'm trying to think, this was a few years ago, but I said the same thing. I'm like, hey, I'm totally okay with working for free. We did it. It's like, you don't want to work for free in the sense where I think there's a lot of negative connotations around working for free. When a brand comes to you and says like, hey, we'll do this in exchange for exposure. Like that's one thing. But if you're in the early stages, it's kind of like interning. And it's like, I interned. I know a lot of people who interned now have very successful careers. And it's, as you're getting started, you need something to put in your portfolio and say like, hey, I created this thing for this brand. Here's what it looked like. You can do that, whether it's you practicing without an official relationship with the brand and just posting like branded photos, or you could reach out to a brand and say, I'm interested in doing this. Would you be interested if I do it for free? And some would say yes, some might say no. In this case, the person did that. I think she actually did it in a post, talked about a brand that she loved, and then after shared it with them and said, hey, if you'd ever need food photography help, would love to offer my services. And they're like, actually, that'd be awesome. And it was like, oh, cool. It worked. And the follow-up to me after was like, how much do I charge? I was like, oh my gosh, that's another conversation. But yeah, I think that's a great point and something that should be considered if you're in the early stages. Just don't stay there too long. Eventually get to the point where you feel comfortable charging for your services. I'm curious to hear, you know, as we kind of come to the end here, you have a lot of different places that you've created product, services. You work with students, you do workshops, you have your book. What have you found to be most impactful from like a business growth perspective?
Oh, that is a really, so I would say two things. One is I love my digital products because it, you know, it takes a lot of work upfront to create them, but they are passive income streams and they're things that I sell, you know, like to use the stereotypical thing, things I sell in my sleep. I do love that. For me, the most lucrative is actually my food photography work. So I have a handful of recurring clients that I create, you know, monthly content for. So that's quite lucrative. And then finally, my online courses are much more profitable than my in-person workshops. And that's just because there's much more overhead in running, you know, in-person
space
workshops.
And, where,
The food and also it just takes just more admin time to arrange everything, you know, where's everybody staying, accommodation, all those things. But online courses just means you can serve more people. And, you know, again, there's that upfront cost of creating it. But once you've created it, you know, it's an amazing income stream. So those are kind of my three things.
And kind of as a lead in, as we close out, I'm sure there are people who, whether it's a course, whether it's a workshop, whether it's working with you coaching or your book, a lot of options. We'll link to those in the show notes. How can people reach out and connect with you, work with you? And what would you, would there be kind of like a process that like, hey, start by signing up for the email list or start by like, buying the book and going through that? Or is it kind of like a la carte in regards to where people are on their journey in regards to what it looks like to work with you?
Yes. So I think the two best ways I would say is, number one, I run an Instagram food photography challenge called Eat, Capture, Share. I've been running that for 4 years and more than 3,000 people sign up to it every season. And it is free. And what it does, it goes back to something we talked about before, is it really, for one, I share a lot of my teaching with participants. And there's also a live Instagram live kind of show where we do teaching as well. So there's a lot of value that you get for free just from that, you know, in terms of your learning. But the second thing it does, and I think that's a side effect I hadn't kind of, you know, anticipated, is a lot of really strong friendships are built, you know, because for 3 weeks you're with this group of people who feel just as passionate about food photography as you do, and you're set these really challenging tasks, and everybody's cheering you on and commenting and following you, and you know, there's just these really strong bonds that are built through that. So that is the best and my most popular offering for sure. I think for people who are really already a and that's for everybody, beginners to, you know, professionals. Right. But I think for people who know the, their manual mode, who've, you know, done all the things, watch all the YouTube videos, then I would say the next part is my book, because it's really about finding your style and finding your creative voice and, you know, doing that introspective work. I think I shared my heart in that book, and I really believe in it. I really feel that it's transformational. And those are the two things, the two most powerful things I think I could, could mention.
That's awesome. And it's beautiful. It's really well done. And so not only is it impactful in terms of the content, but also it's like a book you could set out, and people who don't do food photography could look through and I think really enjoy looking through it. And so it's a beautiful creation in and of itself, and also impactful. Kimberly, thanks for coming on the podcast, for talking through this stuff. Really fun for me to connect with you. And we'll be sure to link up all of that stuff in the show notes so people can check that out as well. Kimberly, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope there were tangible takeaways for you and that you're going to be putting them into practice. Now, as always, everything and anything we mention, including links to Björk and his incredible podcast, Food Blogger Pro, some of the bits and pieces I mentioned, my book, of course, and then my signature e-course will be linked to in the show notes. And then also, if you want to connect with me live, I'm going to be going live on Sunday. So the Sunday this comes out, I think, is the 26th of September at 7 p.m. British Summer Time. For a mini food photography and food styling tutorial on Instagram Live. We have got two incredible and amazing guest judges for the Eat, Capture, Share food photography challenge. Even if you're not participating, you can still join the live. You can still join that mini tutorial. I always open up for questions there too, so be sure to join us. Right, that's it. And I'll be back same time, same place next week. See you then. Before I leave you, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I also wanted to let you know that this podcast was brought to you by my Eat, Capture, Share newsletter community, and I'd love for you to join. I will pop the details on how you can join my creative community in the show notes, so do go and check it out. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, it means so much if you can rate, review, and subscribe. All those things will help the podcast to grow and to reach the right audience. You'd kind of make my day. All right, see you soon. Take care.